Please stand for the reading of the Holy Gospel. The Holy Gospel according to Mark.
Glory to you, Lord Christ.
One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck the heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" And he said to them, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need of food? He entered the house of God when Abiathar was high priest and ate the bread of the presence, which it is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and he gave some to his companions." Then he said to them, "The Sabbath was made for humankind, and not humankind for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." Again he entered the synagogue, and a man was there who had a withered hand. They watched him to see whether he would cure him on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. And he said to the man who had had the withered hand, "Come forward." Then he said to them, "Is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath, to save life or to kill?" But they were silent. He looked around at them with anger. He was grieved at their hardness of heart, and he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees went out and immediately conspired with the Herodians against him, how to destroy him. The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. Does it work for me to preach from here?
Yeah.
If it were Christmas, I'd be in the pulpit, or Easter. But when the church isn't so full, I get a little more breeze myself if I'm down here. So some of you know or may have read that it's now the season of preacher's prerogative. Okay, I'll back up. Actually, it's the season of what we call ordinary time. When the color turns green, both Epiphany and now these Sundays after Pentecost, this is officially ordinary time. It's the season of, we often call the season after Pentecost, the season of the church, and the green reminds us that we are to be growing as the leaves bud on the trees and we see the growth in nature. This is going to last from now till Advent. As a child, it was a long season. Now, well, Pastor Paula did say that one of the things, and a revered New Testament professor said to me, "Well, you know, the lectionary wasn't given and inspired by God. The Bible was." So Pastor Paula decided that on some Sundays this summer, and she gave me the choice too, when the Spirit moves us, you may hear from something other than the appointed lectionary, because there are some things that get left out. But I will admit, when I spoke to that same revered New Testament professor who turned 90 last Sunday, and I was with my father on his birthday, and I said, "So, Dad, what do you think is left out of the lectionary that it would be great to preach on?" He said, "The epistle." You can guess he wrote all of his books on St. Paul. So I dedicate this to my father. And indeed, it's often easier for preachers to preach on the gospel or a story from the gospels because they're stories. So maybe I'll start by telling the Corinth story. First of all, you should know that when she said it was from 2 Corinthians, we do call the letter that you heard her read today 2 Corinthians, but it wasn't the second letter he wrote. If you read 1 Corinthians, you may remember Paul was a bit concerned, that's a mild term, because they tended to take something that was true and they ran with it. they heard about the freedom of the gospel and they were like, all things are lawful, so I can do whatever I want. And you can get into the details, but some of them were salacious. Some included bringing suit against each other in the church. And Paul spent his first letter trying to straighten them out. Apparently, they only got worse, and we're missing a letter. We're missing at least one letter, because he refers to it. What you just heard was from chapter 4. In chapters 1 to 3, read it, and if you ever thought Paul was dispassionate, he apparently had an awful experience. What happened was he heard that things had gone from bad to worse. Other missionaries had come and were telling them that what Paul had preached wasn't right because he wasn't very good as a preacher anyway, and he wrote better than he talked. And by the way, his writing wasn't very good. I can tell you that. I had to read it in Greek. He's a bad writer. So Paul was getting dissed in Corinth, and you know, the original problems they had hadn't gone away. They tended to think that the wealthy were closer to God than the poor. This was the church where, when they had communion, in those days, remember, it was a potluck. But in Corinth, Paul says, you're not having the Lord's Supper. Because some would come, and see, the thing was, they didn't understand that potluck means you share. And he literally says this. He says, some come and go away hungry, and others go away drunk. In other words, those who could afford a lot of wine drank it, but didn't even share the food and wine that they had. That's the church that he hoped his first letter would help straighten out. He had started that church. It didn't, and what he refers to in this, what was at least his third letter, he called it his letter of tears. Have you ever, those of you old enough and most here, have written an email? Have you ever drafted an email and had the good sense not to send it? Have you ever drafted an email and in the heat of the moment hit send, and 2 seconds later you're thinking, oh, shoot, too late? That was Paul's reaction after he sent what must have been an angry, anguished, bitter letter that he called this letter of tears. He, unlike some of us who just like, not going to do that again, Paul really thought about the harm he had done a relationship that was already in trouble. And so he writes this letter. And his goal was to repair the relationship. And he knew that how would you feel? The first letter from him had been corrective. The next letter, he was ticked off and is shouting at you in all caps. Would you be inclined to even want to hear the next letter that comes, what we know as 2 Corinthians? Some probably were so angry they didn't want to hear it. We know they did, because the only reason we have this letter you heard from today, and will for now, there's 6 weeks of readings from 2 Corinthians, is because it reached them. Maybe we think Titus probably brought it with him, and maybe he helped them at least listen. But it struck a chord. Otherwise, they would have thrown it out. But instead, those early letters, the reason they're in our scripture is they were copied. People saved them. They sent them to their cousin, you know, over in Rome, who needed to hear what was really good. So this letter was written by Paul in some anguish, but concern that they not get off track of what was central, of what was important. And so today we get actually what's a favorite image for many people, that where Paul says that we are clay jars. I remember a song from, I think, the St. Louis Jesuits that used that image. Well, when I was 18, my dad finally took us with him to Israel. He had been going for some years by that point as part, a group of seminaries took volunteers to a Roman dig, Caesarea Maritima. And You know, at 18, I didn't care much if I was going to get dirty, and you're digging with your personal trowel. What I wasn't prepared for was the best part of the day. The best part of the day was not 4:30 when we had to get up, because we hit the field at dawn. We had a light first breakfast, got there at dawn, so that at 8 o'clock we took a break, had second breakfast, went back out, and at noon we were done. Trust me, in Israel, you do not, in the months of June and July, want to be out working in the dirt under the sun. The best part of the day, though, turned out to be the group that in that day's rotation was on KP duty. Now, I'm not talking about the kitchen that we ate out of. You see, the dig, every day, I was in a public area, actually a bath, it turned out, once we got far enough. Some people were in some other fields. We weren't in the dump, but amongst the three or four fields we had, every day, there were these, we called them gufas, I think it's the Arabic term, made out of tires, these big rubber buckets. And we would have 12 to 14 bucketfuls of potsherds. Now, this isn't the fancy stuff. This is, there's fine Roman ware, terra sigillata. It's the kind that has decoration in it, beautiful stuff. And certainly this would not be, we wouldn't put anything metal, bronze, much less silver or gold. We're talking clay pots. Thing is, apparently in those days, I mean, these clay pots were used for everything. They were used to cook. They were used for food storage. If you remember the wedding at Cana, those big amphora that would have held so much, same basic clay. And it was clearly very fragile. And I used to swear they must have just, when things broke, they just tossed it out the window, because you found it everywhere in a city by, as I say, the bucketful. There would be the bases. Those would usually survive intact. And then, you know, whatever the size was of the container, if they had handles, often the handles, well, they would break off. And then you'd have so many pieces, you could never put these back together. They weren't worth it. They were just ordinary clay pots. And so but there was nothing better at 2 o'clock in the afternoon than getting to put your hands in the cold water. It's why pastors love baptisms in the middle of the summer. We get to put our hands in cold water to wash every single one of those potsherds, and to listen to the experts then explain exactly where these were from, if they weren't locally sourced. We are God's clay pots. We are common. We are ordinary. And yet, God puts what is precious in us, not just for our sake, but for the sake of others. It is a treasure that we have in us. It's a treasure that can't be valued, and yet what is of uncountable value to God and us, God entrusts to us. So from this, first of all, realize this means God does not expect us to become perfect. Those dang clay pots were never going to turn into the fine terra sigillata. They weren't going to. They were going to serve their purpose. And that's us. We are to be who God has created us to be, fashioned us to be. We are to know that just as when we have a baptism, you know, we don't put Perrier or some fancy water in there. It's water from the tap. It's, if we were by a stream, a river, a lake, ordinary water. By God's command, Jesus' command, does miracles. Holy Communion doesn't start out holy. It starts out as ordinary bread. Okay, we use wafers here. But trust me, if we used bread, it'd be ordinary. And the wafers are about as plain as you can get. They're not, it's not special because they're wafers. Wafers are just convenient. Wafers are flour and water, ordinary stuff. The wine, you can use about any wine. In Japan, where my niece is, yes, they'll use sake. They'll use the local wine. We can use red wine, white wine. Here, for some, it's grape juice. It doesn't matter what kind. You know, we don't. I did serve a church once that, yes, they informed me when I arrived that the worship committee had had a wine tasting to choose the wine, and wasn't I sorry that I had missed it because they had already made the selection. But did that matter? Did it need to be the perfect to the palate wine? No, because just as God takes that water and through it makes us, children of the Heavenly Father, so God takes ordinary bread or wafers with gluten or without, doesn't matter, wine that's fermented or less fermented, and it becomes the very essence, the body and blood of Jesus Christ, which we are allowed to take into ourselves to make us again return to the holiness we had in baptism. And if that's not a miracle, and we say all are welcome, because that's God's invitation. God doesn't say, you got to be good enough, and then I'll give you the holy gifts. Miracles only happen to good people. That's not how it works. That's not the good news of Jesus Christ. And so it is for us. We may be the real miracle. When you look in the mirror, whether you're happy with yourself or not, when you look across the table at a member of your family, whether you're pleased with them or disappointed, when you pass someone on the street and you want to pass on the other side or you want to go give them a hug, God does miracles in and through us. This is not always going to be apparent, and we sometimes resist it. Sometimes it's with ourselves. The son of a pastor who recently tried to commit suicide, and thankfully, he survived, but his parents asked for their friends to pray for him and for them. Sometimes we see the vessels of others and they don't measure up. I have a childhood friend, Catherine Teachin. My dad was a professor of New Testament. Her father was the president of the seminary. We went to grade school together. In St. Louis, it was a Lutheran grade school, so 8 years. And on Friday, she posted on Facebook that for the third time, just within about a week, her husband had been stopped and told he was speeding. But he knew he hadn't been. And in fact, they could not, none of them cited any specific speed that he was going. Last time I was stopped, I was told, and the trooper was right, exactly how much I'd been going. I agreed, I had. I was lucky, I got a warning. I think it was because, sadly, it was a Sunday and I had my collar on. I was rushing back to the house where a plumber was going to meet me because I had big problems. But that was no excuse, was it? But this man, Christopher, he was not speeding. If he was guilty of anything, it was of driving while black. 3 times in just over a week. The deputy gave him a warning. Again, even though they couldn't say how fast he was going. And Catherine said, she's taught him as best a white woman can, you know, what will help. And yeah, he keeps his hands on the wheels. He says, yes, sir, yes, ma'am. He's very polite. But boy, she's glad he makes it home. And he never says, and he just says, I was stopped by the police, and no, I wasn't speeding. What do we see when we look at another person? Do we put the blinders on or the glasses that instead of seeing who God sees, we see from our preconceptions and our stereotypes. It can be seeing someone who is old and assuming they're set in their ways. I will tell you, I visited one member of this congregation who said, "Now, Pastor, some people you visit probably tell you they don't like the new music." She said, "But, you know, the only music I ever really had trouble with was heavy metal." And she was serious. She knew perfectly well that some of you don't like the newer music as much as others of you do. But there she was, against all stereotypes we might ever have of somebody who's homebound, cannot even come to church, but would love to be here to sing whatever. God looks at each of us, every single one of us, and wants to claim us, invite us, welcome us as God's own child. Not turn us into some imaginary perfect person, but as who you are, who the other person next to you, across the aisle, across the street, across the country is. We are ordinary people who most of our lives live in ordinary time, forgetting that our ordinary time is God's time. And these very ordinary, imperfect bodies, souls, minds are created by God and can contain and give to others the grace of God, the knowledge that no, we don't need to change who we are and become somebody else, because God, through Jesus Christ, came into this world for the sake of the world. Can others glimpse that treasure in you? You might be a person who's got better words than Paul or me, and it may be your words that tell them about how they are loved and accepted. For a lot of us, we better at least show it with what we do. Can they tell that we know the love of Jesus by how we treat not just the people like us, our age, our gender, our background, but those who are different? Because that's how Jesus was. Challenging the Pharisees, knowing that they were going to have a hard time with what he had to say, but not ignoring them. And that man with the withered hand, who in that day and time would have been seen as presumably being cursed by God, because otherwise why would that have happened? That was the common thinking. But Jesus, come here, hold up your arm. And without fanfare, without making a big deal of it, except to put the Pharisees in their place, but with that man, made him whole. We can help others know that they are and can be whole and don't need to keep searching for something more to make them better, to make them perfect. Rejoice in the ordinary. Ordinary time, ordinary people, miracles by the grace of God.